Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. And so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Tried to change my country, you've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Certainly do love this land. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. English Defence League radio show, the voice of the EDL. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, my host of the show and producer of the show this evening is a very own Cal Fritzy, a.k.a. Red Fox Blogger. Tonight, Jess Harpy. That's an interesting phrase, Cal, and it's good to have you here this evening. I hope you're well.
Hi,
Hello, Jeff. How are you this evening? And yes, I am your harpy because I am the one that emails Jeff and Skypes Jeff and makes sure that he's eating properly and getting his rest.
You most certainly do, Kel, and it's great to know that I've got someone like Kel who really sort of works in my corner on my behalf. God bless you, Kel. And I've seen another two of our great people who's part of our panel as well. And let me see, who have we got? My goodness me. I don't know about that. I saw a little struggle going on in the corner of my eye, Kel. And of course, he's removed his bloody bell from his collar. So he's trying to keep it slippy. But Tim, you're putting on some weight there. Yeah, good in, ladies. This is, we've got Cat Strangler 101, our very own Mr. Tim Burton, and his nickname tonight, That Fat Cat. And with that, let me bring him in. There you go. Oh, hang on, what's going on here? There you go. Good evening, Tim.
Yeah, good evening, Jeff, and good evening, Kel, and I'm glad to see you both there, sounding very chipper. And ladies and gentlemen, it's all a complete lie about my putting on weight. It's not true at all. What's happened is Jeff and Kel have gone out today and they've bought a smaller cat flap. It looks identical in every way. They've fitted it, and they're trying to make me think I'm too fat to get through the cat flap.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's selling us bulky pies. Look at that weight around his waist, Kel. Look. Good to have you here anyway, Tim.
How's your diamond encrusted new collar with the bell on it working out for you there?
Yes. I mean, I had to take the bell off my collar. I mean, you know, all the birds were flying away before I could pounce on them this afternoon. So, I mean, that had to go. So, apart from that, yeah, the diamond encrusted collar is working really well. I mean, chicks love that stuff. Diamond encrusted. It goes down really well at the local disco.
Yes, yeah, so. I should think it would do. Yes, Tim. We've got Kel giggling already, Tim. What we like, eh?
You're not funny yet, woman. Knock it off.
It's good to hear Kel laughing, isn't it, Tim? It's good to hear the laugh
there.
It's good
to hear her laughing.
It is. But also, I've got another part of our panel here this evening who's sitting there very quietly and a great gentleman. Of course, that's our very own Mr. Agador. And tonight, of course, but the unpleasant fella. Good evening there, Doran.
He's the unpleasant blind guy.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, I'm unpleasant, but I'm feeling a little bit more pleasant right now because I just got a certain package from Canada, and I am now mugged. I am the proud possessor now.
You got it.
Of
yay!
A mendacious, grievance-mongering
tequila
artist mug.
Woo!
And
yes.
I've already got the place dusted off in the vault. You know, I moved that pesky Fabergé egg out of there, and I'm going to put this in. Let's face it, it's limited edition here, so.
Lovely. Well,
wonderful.
Put that Fabergé egg in the drawer.
Yeah,
exactly.
You think you won't need that anymore?
No, certainly not.
You know that those mugs, I've got to say, Kel and Tim, and of course Agador, those cups, in a few years down the line, they'll be really, really worth a lot of money. So look after them, treat them like it's gold, because that's going to be the price of gold, these cups, in a few years, or these mugs, should I say, in a few years' time. So there you go. And it's always good to see... You know, put it in on a special display, which I know most people do when they get these sort of things. That you won't drink out of it because it's sacrilege. You know, these cups, these these mugs. There's a special reason behind it. So it'd be nice to be kept in there in the glass cabinets, isn't it? Like guys.
Absolutely. And I want to ask Agador, did you get the Made in Canada scented hand soaps?
Oh, yeah, I did. You know, I opened up the box and I said, why does this coffee mug smell like Pier 1 Imports? And then I looked and I saw, hey, it's hand soap. It's great. And I want to thank you very much for the mug. I appreciate it a whole lot. And it is going to be a treasure that I'm going to hold on to and pass down to anyone who succeeds me and tell them that it is a piece of history.
Yeah,
thank you.
They're family heirloom, you know. Like,
and I should explain that I throw in a couple of bars of soap with the coffee mug. These are homemade soaps made in my city, my community, and I like to support small business. And these are lovely soaps, all made from scratch. So I hope that this company is getting the international attention I think it deserves. So there you go. Two for one.
Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yes. Also, done, Mr. Agador, for actually winning. There was a question that you was asked, and you won that evening. So great stuff there.
thank you. And I will enjoy using the hand soap indeed. Yes.
It'll last forever.
Oh, yeah.
One bar will last at least a month. I like things that last forever. They're wonderful. But no, you guys really will. When you listen to the Red Fox blogger on Monday afternoons, him and myself, we have a contest in which you can win your own Mendacious Grievance Mongering Takiya Artist coffee mug. But you better be quick because we're giving up the last
going
on
quick,
Monday.
Soap
bars there because I like to support local business as well.
Good on you, Kel. Well done. I'd just like to say that I've noticed another one of our young gentlemen has aggressed himself into the studio tonight. And, of course, that's our very own Mr. Tommy English, EDL son, as Kel put there. Yes, Tommy. Good evening, Tommy. Good to hear from you, brother.
Hey, Tommy.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Hey, Tommy. I hear that Tommy has been down to the seaside, and he's started a collection of some very nice furniture. Isn't that right, Tommy?
That's some of the furniture I saw flying through the air in that video.
I'll tell you something, guys. Now, I was actually there at that pub, and the camera was switched on at exactly the wrong time. Probably imagine. Basically, it started off like a couple of chairs, and we're having patio sets, and then it became, hey, have a pint on us, you know. Basically, that Antifa mug threw a pint in my face, you know. I was like, was that supposed to be an insult? Because I swallowed most of it.
Well, that's it, Tommy. I dare say you have plenty of practice.
Well, what I will say this, guys, for those of you who have seen what happened outside the pub, you can see me in my little blue stripy hoodie in there, because I've got my sunglasses on, obviously. We was in that pub just after the match, so I have a quick pint, we have a long journey back up north, jobs are good and that's it. Then you've got about 60 Antifa coming up this road, and obviously weather was exchanged. Oh, you are a racist. How am I a racist? Because you're white. I'm thinking, what? That's university education right there. I said, right, I'm white. Yeah. You're right. You're white as well, so that means you're racist. No, I'm not white. Well, you are. I can see you are. No, I'm black. I said, white. That's why we wear black colours. We purify our skin colours by wearing black.
She said you're Caucasian, Tommy. She said you're Caucasian.
Yeah. Well, the ironic thing is, guys, that even though Section 60 was in place, they did follow that rule, but as soon as they put those scarves up, we knew there and then that was it. Now, you know those benches that you can get where you've got the tables attached to them? Next minute, we know we're getting two of those thrown at us.
Yeah, well, I think the thing about it is that, and I did want to highlight this, that when people went down to Brighton for the Patriot, the March for England, everybody went under not the guise of being in English Defence League, which I had a chat with Kel about. As I said, anybody that goes to March for England, these are Patriots, and they don't go under the auspices of being, you know, English Defence League. They're not going in their colours, and this is nothing to do with the English Defence League as such, because the March for England has been going on for a number of years, and it's its own thing, isn't it? And we've always said that, and we always like to highlight that, that anybody goes there, they go under the auspices of being a patriot, and, you know, but not going under the guise of the English Defence League, because they don't appreciate, actually, the actual guys who run the March for England, you know, don't want other, you know, groups naming themselves, this, that, and the other. They want to be as a Patriots Day out. Normally it was, for many years, ladies and gentlemen, this what normally goes on once a year at Brighton, it's normally a family occasion. But over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been some confrontation with the lefties down at Brighton. And as some of you probably see some pictures of a young girl, actually, I think it was a player, I'm not sure it was, lost an eye with one of these...
That was the nurse,
these...
wasn't it? Yeah, the nurse last year got a bottle for the fish.
A nurse,
yeah.
Lost her eye. I mean, this is how quite brutal sometimes. You go in there, you haven't want to have a day out with your family, and before you know it, you've been bombarded with bricks and bottles. And these people had their children there, a couple of years ago, they had their children there, the kids got cuts on their heads, and all the people was there was just marking, you know, the day, St. George's Day. They wanted to have the special time, you know. But the lefties don't like you because you class yourself as being an Englishman and proud of who you are, your heritage and this, that and the other. They don't like you saying that. You, in their eyes, are a racist because you like to fly the St. George's flag. You like that heart that beats in you that's patriotic. And these people, these other little scumbags out there, just don't get it, that this is what this nation was for, the blood and the sacrifice of this nation that was paid. And people like to show their respects for the people that stood before them and to show that we're proud people. But it seems there's a lot of people out there don't like us to be proud. They don't like us to be proud of who we are and try to beat us down with the biggest sticks they can possibly find. But guess what? It's not happening because you can't take that beating heart away from the Patriots out there. And I think you would agree, Tommy, and
I
Kel and what Tim.
What you've got to remember as well, Jeff, look at Antifa's logo. It's, what is it? No Nation, No Borders, One Love. I think that was their logo. Something as ridiculous as that sounds. But, yeah, it was... I do take my hat off to the police who got us out of Brighton safely, and also to the CCTV, and to the witnesses who even said that they attacked us. But, yeah, but all in all, it was a good day. I mean, basically, the weather could have been better. It was absolutely chucking it down to start on. Before we left, it was lovely sunny. Oh, God, we should have waited a bit later on. But I didn't get back till 3:30 in the morning, guys.
Oh, my goodness me. Really? That's such a long day for you, Mark. Goodness me, Tom.
Aye, I left home. I was on Nowhere 90's show before I left. And it was about quarter to two. I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, mate. I'm going to have to go to my lift stay now."
But anyway, I'm glad that you got on up because I did pre-warn you, didn't I, Tommy? That it's going to probably get a little bit lively down there. You know, I did a few things that's been going about, as you do, but and of course it come to fruit that there was a few little problems that arose from it.
Oh yeah, and Tommy, I want a word with you after the show, sir.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, by the way, Tommy, I've got a couple of names that I took down for you, a few days ago, just to register with you at some time. So have that on your calendar, my friend.
Oh, good. And, what I would like to say as well, guys, you might get a bit of a chuckle out of this. Last night I was just scrolling through my Facebook. I was going down my newsfeed really fast. You know when you read something and like your eyes pick up certain words or phrases? Now, I was going through a really quick, just having a look, and I see the words Paul Weston arrested by Tim Burton. I thought, oh God, what was that about?
I'm glad you brought that up, Tommy, because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, what the hell, Tim? Come on, man.
I met Tim and said, what's going on? It's like, now I've just gone through, now I've got Muslim sex grew inside continues as another UK gang convicted by Tim Burton.
Yeah, I have to say, if anybody is following my Facebook profile, unfortunately, I write for several online magazines, as I'm sure some of our listeners know, and this particular magazine, who shall remain nameless, the way the editing works there, unfortunately, I've got no control over the headline, so I put the article in, and then they put "By Tim Burton" on the end of the headline, and unfortunately, I don't have any control over it, but some of the results look a bit odd. So yeah, I didn't arrest Paul Weston.
Okay, guys, here it is. Liberty GB leader Paul Weston quotes Churchill gets arrested by Tim Burton.
Yeah. Yeah, slightly unfortunate, but that's the reason behind that.
There you go.
You beat the rap and then you throw your boss under the bus, Mr. Liberty GB, radio officer? What is this?
There you go.
Yeah.
Mohammedism, was it, Paul Weston?
What's that, sorry?
He quoted Mohammedism, didn't he, from Churchill? Mohammedism,
yeah,
he did.
It's a very famous quote from the River War that was written, I think, in 1898, I believe.
That's correct.
And it's been quoted extensively on the internet. But when he read it out through a megaphone on the steps of the Guildhall in Winchester, somebody complained. And the thing is, even though he wasn't threatening anybody, he wasn't harassing anybody, within 3 minutes, a whole squad of police officers, about 7 police officers, turned up to quiz him about it, and he ended up in a police cell and subsequently charged with racially aggravated harassment, which is something I know a little about, ladies and gentlemen. So,
Tim, I'm sure it's just a passing knowledge that you have about this.
A passing knowledge, yeah, that's right, Kel. You got it, but yeah,
It has been talked about. This what happened to Paul Weston last week. It's totally outraged people from around the world. I mean, I think it was even mentioned in Holland today. I think I was reading in the Daily Mail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's all over the place, Jeff. In the United States. It's in Canada. It is in, the UK. All over Europe. It's in Australia. Yeah. And Enza Friari, who is one of those contesting for a seat within the EU elections coming up May 22nd, ladies and gentlemen, please get out there and vote for Liberty GB. She posted a wonderful article on the Liberty GB website, and I have been sharing that in the chat room a couple of times this evening and talking about the outreach heard around the world. And I spoke with Chris, who is CK. He sent me a wonderful article about Geert Wilders, his apprisement of it.
Well, he's actually asking some questions in the Dutch Parliament, which is something. This is something that should be happening in every European country because, as you so rightly said, it is an international outrage, and it's been mentioned to me on a couple of occasions that what we ought to be doing is getting together on street corners and actually reciting that speech at every opportunity. I mean, it's not a long speech. You can memorize it in an hour or two, and we should be getting out there on street corners and just reciting that speech at every opportunity, and they can't arrest us all for it. That's what we should be doing.
Tommy,
exactly.
I just think this is the most craziest thing I think with yourself that was taken to task, Tim, and now with Paul. being manhandled the way he was, and the indignity of it when he was standing on the Winchester steps there, and being bundled away in the back of a police van because reciting one of a great war leader, and one of the greatest heroes of my time, and probably yours and a lot of people out there. He was a man of the people, a man of the times. He had his fingers on the pulse, Sir Winston.
Well, I think what's more important about it, it's not so much that speech, but I mean to recite that speech takes about 2 minutes. I've timed myself in doing it. Now, when Paul started to read it, what he said was that within
you are brilliant.
Within 3 minutes, the police arrived, so they probably didn't hear much, if any, of that speech at all. And that's, but just because somebody had complained, they felt that they could come up to him and basically harass him when he was going about his business as a prospective parliamentary candidate, speaking in public, which is every candidate's right. We've done it for hundreds of years in this country. Parliamentary candidates have gone to public places. They might have had to ask permission to stand where they were standing in order to give the speech they were going to give, but that's a routine thing, okay? I wouldn't have expected Paul Weston to do something like that without getting the appropriate permission. But within a few minutes of him speaking, to be surrounded by seven police officers on the say-so of somebody phoning them up and saying, I'm offended or distressed by what I've heard. I mean, that's just ridiculous. If everybody who gave a speech was in fear of somebody phoning up the police to say that they were offended or distressed by what they've heard, then nobody would be allowed to give any speeches anywhere at all. It's absolutely crazy. And
you wouldn't be able to canvass, would you? If you
you would not be able, quite so, Jeff, and you would not be able to canvass at all. And that takes away from our cherished notion of freedom of speech and democracy that we've enjoyed for hundreds of years, and why should we be giving it up now just because somebody somewhere says they're offended? Well, the answer is we shouldn't, and we shouldn't stand for it.
Racial issue as well, which is, as Paul said, you've said, and I've said, and so many of us said that Islam isn't a race, for goodness sake. Muslims are not a race. When they bring up the racist motive and they charge you under that hospice of that charge, I think basically if every time you're going to have to prove it in the court. And it also, this is something else I wanted to underline as well. Do you not think it smells very much of blasphemy laws that's been put upon us without us knowing? This has come about, isn't it?
There's two things there, actually, Jeff. One is you're absolutely right insofar as a racially aggravated charge can hardly be said to apply to Islam, because Islam is not a race and Muslims are not a racial group. And that fact is actually in the Crown Prosecution Service own guidelines. If you go online, you can actually see that. But the difficulty is, if they wanted to charge you under religiously aggravated harassment, the bar is that much higher and you'd have virtually no chance of a successful prosecution at all. So what they do is they charge you under racially aggravated harassment on the basis that, in theory anyway, there's a greater chance of conviction. Now, the Crown Prosecution Service isn't supposed to recommend charges unless there is a very good, nominally 80% chance of conviction. But the trouble is that the Crown Prosecution Service is actually stuffed full of Muslim weasels. And so they bring charges against innocent citizens like Paul Weston for no good reason at all, knowing that even if the case is lost, it's still going to have a chilling effect on freedom of speech. And that's the important thing. It's not so much that Paul Weston might get convicted, because if he's got a good barrister and a fair-minded judge and 12 good men and true, he should not get convicted of the charge that he's been charged with. But it's going to have a very chilly, very serious chilling effect on anybody else who wants to get up and speak in public and even touch upon the subject of Islam. And that is absolutely wrong, because Islam is the one thing that ought to be talked about at every opportunity. It's not racist to criticize Islam. It's not even Islamophobic to criticize Islam. Islam has got a lot of things wrong with it and a lot of things which make it incompatible with our Western democracy, and those things ought to be discussed fully and without fear of being arrested for racism or Islamophobia.
I agree 100%. Also, I've got a little comment that Darren Ward is just mentioning in the chat. Do you really need permission to speak in the UK? He's asking that question.
It depends is the answer to that. If you're on private land, then yes, you need to get permission from whoever owns the land. If you're on public land, then you have to be very careful that you're not going to cause any obstruction or affect traffic at all. And that's why it's a good idea always to tell the police that that's what you want to do and that's where you want to stand while you're saying something, and then they make the appropriate arrangements. And then if they say, well, you can't do it there because it'll obstruct traffic or it'll cause a disturbance in that location, that seems absolutely fair. That isn't a problem. But the principle of being able to speak in public, I believe, is a principle which has been enshrined in law for hundreds of years. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that anybody should be able to speak anywhere in public as long as it's not causing an obstruction or it's causing a breach of the peace and or a disturbance of some kind. And that's always been the case. I mean, you could I certainly have seen lots of occasions where you see people in towns and villages who've got something to say, and they go to a public space, which might be, you know, the local town square or village square or something, and they'll stand on a soapbox and they'll start speaking. And that is absolutely fine.
Well, we've got Speaker's Corner, haven't we?
There's that specifically. But the principle is that you should be able to go pretty much anywhere you want and speak on any subject you want, subject to not causing obstruction, not causing a disturbance, not causing a breach of the peace, not making threatening anything threatening or any incitement to violence or incitement to murder. Common sense things, okay, but everything else should be fair game. And the fact that somebody can phone up and say, "Oh, I'm offended by this," and get 7 police officers round within 3 minutes, now that is really, you know, that is double standards, because you can't even get 1 police officer round in 7 days when you've been burgled. You know, they'll phone them up and they'll say, "Oh, we'll give you a crime number," and you think, well, what happens to all the forensic teams that are supposed to come around and take fingerprints? No, you can have a crime number. Now, bugger off or we'll arrest you, you know, for wasting police time.
Now we get to be victory.
That's what they say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this
remember as well, guys, it took them half an hour to get to Lee Rigby.
Well, yeah.
Yes, I mean, we know that. And the thing about it is, it wasn't talked about too much, but there was police on the scene there, Tommy. They was waiting for the armed, you know, response, basically. They was there. It was spoke about on numerous occasions, but it was the general public who were the ones, the heroes, who went up there to see if they could help that young man who was grievously injured there. It wasn't the police doing their duty as such, like, you know, there's a man seriously hurt and they're standing behind their cars waiting for armed response to arrive. You know what I'm saying? It was general public, and these people were waving cleavers and knives about, but these two ladies who tried to help that young man, they're my heroes, Tim, Kel, and
Agatha.
They're the heroes in this side.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I just want to say this. Okay, now this comes into something Tim was talking about a while back. We need to begin using their own techniques against them. All right, every time, you know, Anjan Chowdhury, for instance, or someone like that gets up and starts to speechify, you know, people need to be on their phones saying, look, you know, this, you know, I find his speech offensive. You know, I find his speech offensive on, you know, on religious and racial grounds. Look, I know a lot of times the cops are going to just laugh you out of the station, you know, but these are the techniques they use. And it's, you know, it's time that, you know, I guarantee if something like that happens here in the States, I'm doing it. You know,
yeah.
I don't give a damn if I get laughed out of the station. I'm doing it every time it happens until, you know, I'm going to push until that gives. I'm going to use their techniques against them. You know, if they want to use these charges to inconvenience us, and that's, I think, Tim, you know, is to your point, that is what this is all about. You know, no way is Paul Weston going to jail for quoting Winston Churchill. It's strictly, you know, as a means of gumming up the system and inconveniencing him. If they want to use that and do that, then patriots need to do the exact same thing. What's good for one is good for the other.
Yeah, that's certainly
I'll agree
true,
with
yeah.
you. I would agree with you, Agador, totally there. And also, you know, the thought of Paul being put on trial because of what he said, the Winston speech, Winston Churchill memoirs speech that he was reading, but it's almost a revolutionary thing that could happen in this country because, you know, Sir Winston Churchill was a hero of a lot of people, and think that he could be on trial. You know, if he was alive today, they could arrest him for what he said. You know, it's a dangerous president. I don't really think they're really thinking this through too much. Would you agree with me on that statement, Tim? I don't think they thought this through at all too well.
Well, I don't think they have, and I was just thinking as Agador was talking about it. I mean, you've only got to go down any street in the jihadi triangle in Birmingham on a Saturday morning to see some bearded nut job standing on the corner proselytizing about what a great religion Islam is. Now, you should be on your phone. I mean, there'd be no shortage of these nut jobs. They're on every street corner everywhere. You can't swing a cat without hitting one of these bloody nut jobs standing on the street corner. And it would be a good idea to phone up every time you see one and just say, I'm offended by, in racial and religious terms, by what this guy is saying. And I think if we did that a few hundred times every weekend, just one person could easily do that a few hundred times every weekend. If 1,000 of us did it and they were inundated with phone calls, they probably have to rethink their strategy. But that's what we need. Yeah, exactly. We need a national program of people doing exactly that at every opportunity. We should not let Muslims speak in public without somebody standing up and phoning the police and complaining about it to say they've been religiously offended, because Islam is the most religiously offensive ideology on the planet. So, you know, there's no shortage of opportunities.
I know. And actually, that does lead us to what we wanted to talk about this night tonight with the banner tonight, what to do with Anjum Chowdhury. Kel, I'd like to bring Kel in this because it was something that we were talking about just earlier. So, Kel, your thoughts behind with the Anjum Chowdhury, how we deal with this character. We know what should be done. He should be off the streets and he should have to do what he does. But he has got this, I don't know, because he's got the protection of this religious status around him, and that he seems to be able to get away with so many things that he says out there. Guys, you've heard him. There's not too much. And if you haven't heard Anjum Chowdhury speak at any time, where have you been? I mean, this guy gets on everywhere, doesn't he, Tim? Doesn't he, Kel? And Tommy and Agador, he's always making his hateful set. In fact, he drove a gentleman back, but he wasn't too happy with him. And Ratty, wasn't it, Kel? I'm going to pass it over to Kel now, because it's something we really wanted to be discussing tonight. So that just brought us in just right, talking about Anjum Chowdhury. So, Kel, over to you.
I have been I've been of a mind about this person in the UK and what to do with him. What really attracted me to wanting to cover this topic, and thank you very much, Jeff. I wanted to cover this because what happened with Tim Burton and what happened with Paul Weston has really gotten to me, and that these two gentlemen cannot speak their minds, and they cannot speak truths, but this piece of shit can run around the UK and espouse his garbage. What I'm going to do, Jeff, is that I downloaded a couple of clips. I want to play this. When I tried to download, it wouldn't play, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to play it through my speakers, and this is Ajim Chowdhury being interviewed by Sean Hannity. This is from 2011, but believe me, this is timeless, in which Sean Hannity says, "You are one sick, miserable piece of shit," more or less. Actually, what his parting words to Ajim Chowdhury was, yeah, he said that you're one sick, miserable, evil SOB, but thank you for coming to the show. So listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Every Muslim knows that Israel is occupying Muslim land, and obviously this needs to be repelled. You know, they need to return from where they came. How is it that you can occupy our land and our homes and steal our resources, and you want us to accept it? You would not accept that for your own backyard. You know, yeah. Israel is not, you know, Kansas or, you know, Tennessee. This is Muslim soil, Muslim land, which has been occupied, and it has been stolen, and it will be revived. You know, one of the things
revived.
About Egypt,
You can't answer a simple question. So if you have your way, you're saying you want to wipe Israel off the map. You want Israel destroyed. You don't want state of Israel because you have this view. Now, here's the point I'm trying to make to you, and I will finish my thought. You believe that every woman, non-Muslim, Muslim woman should wear a burqa. You're a fascist. You want to ram that down people's throats. You want to cut off people's hands. Excuse me, I'm not finished. You want to cut off people's hands that steal. You want to stone people to death if they commit adultery. You want to rob Israel's land, and you're justified. And I believe, although you don't have the courage to admit it because you're a bit of a coward, that you believe that people that killed 3,000 Americans are going to heaven and they're going to get 72 virgins. So don't you see, can you not stand back from your sick, twisted, bizarre ideology here to see that those 3,000 people were innocent victims, sir? Can you not see that?
No, you can live under the Sharia.
I can live under Sharia. Thank you, sir. Please, I thank you also very much.
Your food, clothing, and shelter will be provided, and you will not be exploited, unlike as in America and in Britain and in the Western countries. You will have the basic rights, and of course you will live as a citizen, unlike the way people are being exploited at the moment.
But I must live as a citizen
under
Sharia. I've got to live under your caliphate and your way of life, and if I don't, I'll die. I'll be killed, and you'll feel justified, and you'll be rewarded in heaven.
You cannot base your understanding of Islam on one trip to the library.
My understanding of Islam is exactly accurate. Your comments condemn yourself, sir.
Broaden your horizon a little bit more. You know, you're very
immature. Thank you very much for being with us.
Next time we can have a more decent conversation.
Yeah, well, you're one sick, miserable, evil SOB.
Well,
thank you.
I thought that was apt. There's a lot of discussion going on about freedom of speech, and Ajim Chowdhury, he is a good Muslim because he is telling us exactly what Islam is and the designs on what Islam is trying to achieve, and that, of course, is the caliphate. That is a broad description of what Islam is, but this is what's happening in the UK. You folks are dealing with a very, very, very dangerous entity. And I put some slides up there in the above the show notes, folks. If you go up, there are some slides of Ajim Chowdhury, one not so flattering. But there is another one up there, and he is speaking with a megaphone. And behind him is standing Adebola Joe. And Adebola Joe was one who told us that we are slaughtering Lee Rigby in the name of Islam because we as Muslims have a responsibility to tell you that you are not welcome in the East and you are killing our women and children. And so to make his point, he beheaded a soldier in the middle of the streets of London in May of 2013. Like, just lovely. This is the sort of caliber that Adrian Chowdhury attracts. I sent him a couple of tweets. I was very polite, and other than saying, what the hell is wrong with you? I did send him some other tweets saying that, you know, we would really like you to come on the show and defend yourself if you like, sir. And I sent him, Jeff, the call-in number, but so far no response.
No, no. Well, am I surprised? He's still got plenty of time. So, Adrian Chowdhury, if you're out there, and we would like you to come on and defend Islam. we'll try to defend it, but we will sort of be debating with you on issues. So if you are listening to the show and you're thinking of calling in, please do. And if you're a Skype user and a Blog Talk Radio user as well, if you left click on the Skype button, follow the prompts where it said you want to speak to the host or do you want to listen to the show, you will press 1 on whatever device you're on. But if you're not and you're outside of the USA, the number to call in is 001-858-777-5934. I'll repeat again. At 001-858-777-5934. I will be very surprised if he does call in. Islam is undefendable, guys. I mean, let's be honest, it's undefendable.
If anyone calls in, it'll be one of his minions.
Yeah. But, as I say...
Fly, my pet, fly!
But, as I say, I thought this was quite an interesting thing that we would discuss. I mean, he seems to... the thing about it, what gets me, Kel and Tim, Ecuador and Tommy, is how come he's never been implicated on some of the atrocities or the planned atrocities of these people when some of his followers, his converts, wanted to take on MI5 and MI6, take out the top chiefs of the MI5, MI6. How come he's never been implicated? How come? I mean, he's right there. He's the heartbeat of these converts. You know,
he is speaking beneath the guise of a religion, and you have a protected status for religions within your constitution. That's why he's getting away with it. I don't understand, though, the extremism in which this person speaks, how he cannot be arrested for sedition. I don't understand that, Jeff, because this person clearly is a mongerer, and he creates monsters like Adebolajo. Like, if this is not enough for people to understand just how deep the threat of Islam within the UK, and never mind the UK as a standalone, let's talk about the Netherlands, let's talk about Canada, the United States, let's talk about Australia. If people do not understand that these clerics are running around and they are foddering these future acolytes to join the cause of Islam and fight in the name of Islam within our indigenous countries, how to convince our government to deal with it is beyond me, Jeff. I have another clip I'm going to play in a few moments, but I would like for Tommy to address this, because Tommy, being a very young man, has to battle this every single day. Right, Tommy?
Oh, exactly. It's like when it comes to Adrian Chowdhury, you know, with him being a solicitor or whatever he does, what he does, the reason why they can't arrest him for is because he's not the one planning terrorist acts. He's not the one who's doing terrorist acts. What he says, he's saying what Islam is, and it's his followers that do the acts. While he is the influential person who's motivating them, he's not actually saying go out and go blow up the underground, go out and behead soldiers on the streets of London.
He plants the seed, though, doesn't he, Tommy?
He does. That's exactly what he does. He puts that in the head, and then basically that convert or whoever they are, that they're going to be thinking about is going to grow and grow and grow to the point where one day Angie and Charlie are going to say, oh, action has to be taken. Then they go out and do this atrocity. Then they ask him, Then they ask Chowdhury, will you condemn it? And they'll say no. So that's why they cannot arrest Chowdhury, because he's not planning it and he's not doing it. Basically, it's his followers who do it, but he's just there, like you say, putting the seed in their head.
Well, I would say that he's implicated right away along the lines, Tommy, because if you have people who've been following you, listening to you, and they study everything you say, and then the next thing you do, they take the form of the extremist type of thing. I would say he plays a very big part on the way that things have been happening in this country for quite a while there, mate.
Well, no, it's like, look at Nick Griffin, for example. He basically, you know, what he says, which led to the London nail bomber in the 90s.
Mm.
If you remember that. Basically, what was it? It blew up in Iceland, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Tom. That's it. I was just wondering, Tim, you've got some views about this issue as well, haven't you? I'd love to, and of course, then maybe we can talk to Agador about it as well, and because it's a very topical thing that we talk about this evening. So, Tim, your views of what we've been discussing.
Yeah, well, with Anjem Chowdhury, I mean, he's say what you like about him. He's a clever lad, and he's trained as a solicitor, so he probably knows the law better than most, and he knows what he can get away with and what he can't. Having said that, I'm quite certain that if the British authorities really wanted to get him off the streets, they could make something up and get him off the streets and hold him for as long as they wanted. I'm sure that's entirely possible, because it happens to plenty of other people who haven't done anything half as mischievous as Anjem Chowdhury. On the other hand, I take the view that when you've got somebody out there who's obviously completely committed to Islam and is really telling it absolutely like it is from the point of view of a professional Muslim. And that's something else I'd like to say. He's a professional Muslim. A lot of people say, don't you mean devout Muslim? And I say, no, I mean professional Muslim, because devout is something that you use when you're talking about a religion. And, of course, Islam is not a religion. It's a political ideology. So I think we ought to get into the habit of talking about Muslims like that as professional Muslims. And then an awful lot of their behavior starts to make sense, because they're doing it to professionally promote or to promote Islam in a professional way, which is to say telling the absolute truth about it in a way that... all right, it offends quite a lot of us, but nevertheless, he is absolutely telling the truth. And when you've got somebody out there who is so plainly telling the truth about Islam, sometimes I think he's doing people like us a huge favour, being out there and showing the true face of Islam, so we can all appreciate exactly what things are going to be like if Islam ever takes over. You know, nobody is going to be able to say to us, but we were never told. And we just have to say, well, you just look at what Anjem Chowdhury says. So the more publicity he gets, in a way, I think works just as well for us, even if it does upset and offend a lot of people when he does the things he does and says the things he says. So there are two sides to this argument, and I think that although personally, from my point of view, nothing would give me greater pleasure to read in The Guardian tomorrow morning that he's been arrested and thrown into prison and isn't like to be let out in the next 25 years. That would give me personally, on one level, a great deal of pleasure. But I do think that he's doing our counter-jihad cause a huge favour every time he goes out on TV or on radio and opens his mouth.
Well, and I'll throw one in. I'll throw one in there. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. And sorry for interrupting you there, but, you know, I'll throw one in. It's about, you know, I'll expand on Tim's point a bit too. It's, you know, I'm now calling the counter jihad movement, you know, the Islamic education movement. And yes, much as a scumball as Chowdhury is, He's out there putting all of their cards out on the table. He's telling people exactly, excuse me, what the end game is for Islam and the caliphate, and what happens if if they are allowed to have power in any given country. You don't have to tell people, well, look at the history of Lebanon or things like that. That's fine for people who want to bother to look at the history of Lebanon, but it's much better in a sense to have someone like, you know, Anjan, you know, Chowdhury, Chowder, Clam Chowder, whatever, out there, you know, out there, flapping his gums, saying these horrible things, being seen with people who later wind up being murderers, and of course, no one wants anyone to get hurt. But this can all be led back to him and his influence, and he's letting people know that this is the true Islam. And yes, I also agree, Tim, about him being a professional Islamist, because he has as much as said that he gets public assistance in the UK, and he believes that that is owed to him, you know, by the kufir, you know, by the people who are not correct. Yeah, Jeff, it's owed to him by the people who do not believe in Islam, because that's the way it's done in Islamic countries. So yes, I do have a certain appreciation for him, in the same way that I have an appreciation for the Ku Klux Klan here in the United States, the few sad a-holes of those that we have left, because we can laugh at them, listen to their crap, and understand what a crock white supremacy or any kind of race supremacy is. Mm. Chowdhury is no better than they are. So in a way, they serve a purpose, disgusting as they are. Back to you, Jeff. Sorry.
Thank you, Akato. And I was wondering if Kel, your views of Anjan Chowdhury, and then we must take a quick break. So, Kel, your views of Anjan Chowdhury?
Oh, I think he's dangerous. Absolutely. I mean, he's the one in November 2008. He organized the Islam for UK, which has since been disbanded and outlawed in the UK.
Yeah.
But according to the website at the time, it was established by sincere Muslims as a platform to propagate the supreme Islamic ideology within the United Kingdom as a divine alternative to man-made law, and to convince the British public about the superiority of Islam. If this is not enough to convince people that Anjan Chowdhury has to be dealt with, I do not know where else we can turn. But, Jeff, you're due for a break, and I do have another clip if you would like me to play it.
Oh, yes, please, Kel.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. So thank you very much, Kel.
You're welcome, Jeff. Everybody, this is Michael Savage. He is a United States radio host. He speaks about the issues of Islam quite often. And this clip is, I think it was about 2 years ago. I'm not too sure, Jeff. But all the same, another one which is timeless. This is Michael Savage talking about Islam and how he is sick of it. We'll see everybody back here in a little under 4 minutes.
I'm not going to put my wife in a hijab, and I'm not going to put my daughter in a burqa, and I'm not getting on my all fours and praying in Mecca, and you can drop dead if you don't like it. You can shove it up your pipe. I don't want to hear any more about Islam. I don't want to hear one more word about Islam. Take your religion and shove it up your behind. I'm sick of you. Your Bible has been revised several times. Jewish Bible has been revised several times. Not the Quran, though. They still live in the 7th century. Kill homosexuals. Cut the clitoris off women. Put women in dark clothing. Cut off anyone's head who doesn't agree with you. What kind of religion is this? What kind of world are you living in that you let them in here with that throwback document in their hand, which is a book of hate? Don't tell me I need re-education. They need deportation. I don't need re-education. Deportation, not re-education. You can take CAIR and throw them out of my country. I'd raise the American flag, and I'd get out my trumpet if you did it. Without due process. You can take your due process and shove it. I have never lived through a brainwashing like I've lived through for the last 5 years. Every day another story sweet-selling Islam and the Quran. It goes in the face. It's so counterintuitive. Wherever you look on the earth, there's a bomb going off or a car going up in flames, and it's Muslims screaming for the blood of Christians or Jews or anyone they hate. And every day we're told the opposite here. Everything we know to be true, we're told, oh, don't believe what your mind tells you. Believe what the diversity trainers tell you. Believe what the government tells you. It's a religion of peace. Well, why don't they prove it's a religion of peace? Why don't they put down their hateful little book for a few minutes and tell us why, when we pick up their hateful little book, I can read chapter and verse. I can see what it says in their book of hate. It says that if you see a stranger who is not a Muslim, either convert him or kill him. Page after page after page is about religion, a religion that teaches convert or kill. A religion that says oppress women, kill homosexuals, kill the Jew, kill the Christian, kill the infidel. Page after page after page, and we're supposed to sit here and listen to this rubbish about a religion of peace. And every day Bush brings in thousands of more of these throwbacks. Throwbacks wearing medieval costumes, walking around spitting on the ground every time they see a Christian or a Jew or a so-called infidel. These throwbacks think they're better than you underneath it all, and 90% of them are on welfare. 90% of them come in here, and all they do is breed more bombers. More bombers and more bombers. And you're telling me this is the same country? There, I gave it to you from the bottom of my heart. If you don't like it, it's too damn bad. Go write the FCC. It's time to stop hiding behind your pillow. Speak it out at the supermarket. Tell them what you think of Islam. Tell them what you think of Muslims. Tell them what you think of these things. Stop hiding what you feel. Say it to everybody you meet. Let them prove it's a religion of peace. Say it on the supermarket line. And don't care what stares you get from those dumb idiots who are checking out behind you with their Cracker Jacks. Say it to everybody you meet wherever you go. If America started to say it like it is, we could take the country back from the maniacs who are bringing them in by the tens of thousands. What sane nation that worships the U.S. Constitution, which is the greatest document of freedom ever written, would bring in people who worship a book that tells them the exact opposite? Make no mistake about it, the Quran is not a document of freedom. The Quran is a document of slavery and chattel. It teaches you that you are a slave.
Silence! I kill you!
Something's going to happen. Something wonderful.
Yeah, preach it, brother!
Silence, I kill you! Well, Michael Sackell, thank you so much for
being yes, thank you, Kel.
That was a fantastic clip. I loved
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
it, no,
yeah.
Second, certainly I loved was. That.
Can we have a copy of it? Can we have a copy of it in the chat room?
I could bring it up in the chat room right now, and I am very proud to present that on the EDL radio program. This is a voice out of the United States talking about his opinion about Islam and what is going on in the United States. I think the best person to address this clip, of course, being out of the United States himself, would be Agador. Agador, what do you think about what Michael Savage had to say?
That is the most fun I've had with my clothes on in days. I got to tell you, that is, you know, that is a great, I mean, it says it all. You really don't need to say anything else. And I want to point out, okay, this must have been from a long time ago because he said that those ones that Bush keeps bringing in. See, this isn't, you know, okay, if you're on the left side of politics, you know, kind of Labor Party or a Democratic Party or a Green Party or something like that, and you think we're just a bunch of righties in here, no. This, you know, this is something that is coming from every spectrum of politics, this understanding that Islam is an ideology of hate and slavery. It's an ideology of hate and slavery for everyone that is not an Islamist, and that includes you guys. Okay, and those of us who are trying to be on the front lines and criticize this and tell you guys the truth, like Michael Savage just did, all right, are telling that truth for everyone. You know, I mean, he just did a fabulous job. You know, it's one of those things like at the end of a rap song. You know, you just want to do the mic drop thing because he just said it all. It was beautiful.
Well, he said it with passion. And I've got to underline
And if anybody knows, you know, Michael Satt, he's got some great shows. It can be controversial with some shows, but he is he's great to listen to. He's done other bits about Islam, and maybe we will play some other clips on the show, because he speaks with the passion of the real how it really is, like we do. And the thing about it is, guess what, guys? Yes, Michael Savage is banned from the UK along with Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer because his views about Islam. Yeah, there you go. Another one on the banned list. You never know. We might have Michael Savage on the show one of these days. We'll try to get in touch with him and have him on the show. Because I think it'd be great. Great to hear his views. Great to hear people, you know, sort of speaking out what we do all the time. Your views, Tim, I don't know if you've heard that before, but it's been around a little while.
I haven't heard that clip before, and I really like it. Yeah, I think it should be required playing at every opportunity. I'm just trying to think where I'm going to play it first. I think I might rig it up to my loudspeaker system here, which I bought with £70,000 of public money from a local school, and I think I'll set them out on the walls of my house, and I shall broadcast that 24/7. I think that'll be a good place to start.
Either that or Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
When they do the call to prayer at 5 o'clock in the morning, as soon as he puts his hands over his mouth, all you hear is, "What kind of religion is this?"
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that we should be answering back with things like that. I mean, and as I say, I followed Michael Savage for a number of years, we got other things, didn't we? We was playing some clips before we come to air a couple of days ago, wasn't we? And we was you was there as well, Agador, wasn't you? When we was
I want to give the credit. Unless I'm wrong, you guys correct me if I'm wrong. But I want to give the credit to Jeff here, because he's the one that actually found these, clued us in on them. And am I right about that? Because that's true. Whether it was Jeff or Kel, this is awesome stuff.
Yeah, well, for a moment, I could, you know what I'm like sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes, I know, I can see the person in front of me, and the name, I can't think, what's his name now? And it, all of a sudden, I've done a quick Google, and I thought, that's it, Michael Savage, of course. And of course, we brought up, and there was a couple of things that we played. I let Kel and Agador listen, and we thought we'd run with one of them that's so right out there, so what we talk about week in, week out. But I think it was great. As I say, I want to underline that, yes, he's banned from the United Kingdom as well, guys. So there you go. Kel, your view.
I think that we should start addressing these individuals who have a position of prominence. And I'm getting feedback.
Oh, is that from my side?
Yeah.
Do you want me to call back in?
Okay.
Go ahead, Kel.
No.
This moment of silence is brought to you by the English Defense League. Join the English Defense League now.
No, it's brought to you by Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, God.
Hey, I'm trying to plug the organization here, okay?
I've just thought, Kel's got ultimate power. We've had it now. Kel's got ultimate power.
I got the power. I love that when that little box shows up in the studio, end episode or continue. I'm so evil. Oh boy. But you know what? The truncheon is enough for herding the cats around here. Of course, I have a lot of strong viewpoints about this, Jeff, and absolutely. And what should happen is that we have to start individualizing these persons and exposing them on these radio programs, because That is exactly what they are. They're dangerous. They think that they can walk into our countries. Now, I know Ajay Chowdhury is, you know, he was born in the United Kingdom in 1967, and that his background is that of Pakistani. He is very ardent about the Islamic cause. But the thing is, we cannot allow these individuals to get away with what they're doing, ever. We cannot allow that to happen. We're dealing with enough crap in the West as it is. We're dealing with people like Paul Weston right now being what I would say persecuted. We had to endure what Tim Burton went through. And we are dealing with individuals in the United States that go overseas to build orphanages like Pastor Saeed, because he is nothing more than a Christian. Islam has no mercy. And the endorsers in our Western nations, they have to be cut at the knees. They have to be taken to task. They have to be exposed. And Jeff, welcome back.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, it was a short live return.
Yeah. This moment of silence has been brought to you by silence. I kill you.
Yeah, you don't have to actually listen to Ahmed, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. Silence. Silence. I kill you.
Okay, you know what? What we're going to do is I'm going to get in touch with Jeff on another device. We'll take a quick break, and we'll see everybody back here in 3.5 minutes. I think this song is rather apt. I do play it quite often on my other programs. I don't know if I've played it here for a long while, but, hey, you know what? Hey, people like Ajay Chowdhury fight us because...
Try to make it through my life in my way. There's you. I try to make it through these lies, and that's all I do. Just don't deny it. Don't try to fight this and deal with it. And that's just part of it.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show. Jeff has been dropped from the studio. I am on another device trying to bring the host of this radio program back to you. But we do want to thank everybody who is joining us. Of course, we want to thank Jeff Mitchell for being the host and putting such a wonderful program together. I am Kel Fritzy. I am the technical producer of the program and not doing a great job today. But hey, hang on, just bear with me. But we also want to thank the panelists that are here as well. We want to thank Cat Strangler 101, Agador, the Unpleasant Blind Guy, Tommy English, my EDL son, and, of course, Jeff Harpy. And so what we're going to do is also acknowledge the people who are in our chat room. We've had people pop in, people pop out, as we are wont to do. But we really want to thank Bigfoot. We want to thank Kath, Darren Ward, Dodgy Dave, EDL Minx, Eric Kyle, FDGO. We have some guests in here. Maddie Eastwood, please come back. You're new here, and we love having you here. Porky Steve Stanger, my voice, and Vito Esposito, mine and Tim's boss. So there you go. And you know what? I think we got Jeff back. Hey, Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, I'm holding them tight here because I just kept getting cut off. It wouldn't let me call back in, and I come under the guest, then it cut me off there. I thought, my goodness me, it's they're conspiring against me, Kel. It's a conspiracy.
Oh, you know what it is, Jeff? You know what it is? You have arachnids in the studio, I think. And I'm trying to chase them out.
Oh, don't you start, Kel. Stop it.
Yeah, I reckon that's it.
Did you get it?
Can you hear that? Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah. I'm so corny. I'm surprised that Jeff doesn't fire me. Arachnids.
Yeah. Can you hear that little legs pattering away, Jeff? Can you hear their little legs pattering away?
I've just got some news I'd like to broadcast.
Sorry, Tommy, go. What's that?
Springbank Estate in Hull. Young white girls believed to have been groomed by 8-2 taxi men. The men who have done these grooming are said to be Asian.
Oh, no.
The hunting for 25 men of Asian descent who have groomed 4 young white girls between the ages of 12 and 15 over a 4-month period.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it seems like the same old story, doesn't it, Tom?
Guys,
I don't know about you.
This is my estate in Hull.
I know, Tom. And what I'm saying, you know, on a national scale, and people around the world, aren't you getting a little bit fed up with these horrific stories that we're hearing of these Islamic slavery gangs going about their business with these children? These could be your children, my children. And they're doing absolutely horrific things with these young kids, ruined their lives, it does. And that we allow these people in this country to carry on as they're doing. Well, I hope that, it's quite obvious it's been uncovered, Tommy, and that the old Bill are looking for these people, 25 other people. It just goes beyond all the scales, doesn't it? We all said this is the tip of the iceberg, didn't we? Guys, we've always said it's the tip of the iceberg that a lot of these cases are becoming to the forefront, and that's exactly what we're seeing. And as Tim says, shock and horror, you know, it's a common occurrence, and it just makes us all so bloody angry that something should be done, something should be tightened up in these groups of people who do these things to these young kiddies. And I don't care who it is. You mess about with young kids like that, the full force of the law should be brought down hard on you, or you'll be kicked out of the bloody country if you're part of this Islamic slavery gang. We don't want you in this country. We don't want slavers in this country. Am I right, guys? Tommy, Tim? We don't want these type of
people. How many more victims, guys? How many more victims will it take for people to wake up? There's been thousands over the space of 50 years.
Can I just get in here, Tommy? I want you to tell, you know, because not everyone understands who's listening to this in an international audience. Not everyone really understands exactly what grooming is. So would you please explain to the people in real terms exactly what grooming is? And remember, everyone who listens to this, this is going on in Tommy's neighborhood. Islam comes home to you. This is what's happening.
When it comes to grooming in this country, how it is, it's you make friends with them. Obviously, you pull up in a car, you have a chat with them, a bit of a natter. Then you'll do the same for the next day, next day, next day, next day. Then obviously it becomes, oh, would you like a pack of cigarettes? Would you like a bottle of vodka? Then they'll say, oh, yeah, I'll have some of them. Then they basically buy this stuff for them every single day. Then it builds a position of trust. Now, that's your first stage of grooming. Then it's secretive text messages, meeting up without telling nobody where you are, not telling your friends, not telling your family who you're meeting. And then basically, grooming goes on for about 5 or 6 months until one day they'll say, let's go out one night. They'll say, yeah, out the door. That's it. Gang raped by 40, 50-year-old Muslim men. It's an abuse of trust when it comes to grooming. That's how it starts. You've got to build trust up over a space of 5 or 6 months, and then that's when you basically strike. That's when you get what you've really wanted. Then that's it. You just sod the girl off, or the lad. It happens to guys as well. It happens to young lads.
Yeah.
And basically, that's it. And this poor young girl's life is destroyed. It basically, they'll never be able to trust anybody again. They won't be able to speak. And a lot of them do commit suicide.
Yeah, there has been cases of that, Tommy. You're right there.
I know. This is what I say to every single left-wing person who I see. Physical scars heal. Mental ones don't.
No.
Thank you for that, Tommy.
I think that you
might
bring a very valid point there, Tommy. Thank you for how you read things as well. Agador, you wanted to come back to Tommy.
I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you, Jeff. No, I just wanted to say to Tommy, thank you, because a lot of people, they hear these terms, grooming gangs and this kind of thing, and they don't really understand what it is. And you just spelled it out in stark relief what it is. And, this is something that everyone should pay attention to, not just in the UK, but in the rest of the West, in Europe. And yes, here in the United States, people, you think this isn't going on in Michigan right now, and then it's not going to go on in some of our larger cities? You think it's not happening? Believe it, people. It will. Okay? If they get away with it in the UK, if they get away with it in other parts of the world, it's going to be in your face. It's already in my friend Tommy's face. It'll be in yours before you want it to be. Okay? So this is real. Okay? Back to you, Jeff. Thank you.
Well, I was getting back in there, Jeff. After this show, if you want to Google up a young girl called Charlene Downs, I'll probably inbox you on Facebook. Now, 10 years ago, she was a victim of this grooming, and basically, they have never found her body. Never. Now, basically, there was a rumour, wasn't there, guys, that they basically put her inside the Donna meat, didn't they?
Well, they were bragging about it, that people was eating her.
Yeah.
They sold her.
They said to cut her up, and they put her into the Donna meat.
There you go, guys.
Ten years, they still haven't found a body. 10 years. They're still looking for her. They've never found her.
No, they won't find it because there's no remains, is it? It's been consumed by the poor public out there. As I say, this is a very, very unsavoury story because, as you say, there's never been a body. And, of course, the police wasn't doing their jobs properly. And these, believe it or not, and the story goes, these people walked out of the court. They walked out of the court, and they both ended up with about £250,000 in their pockets. So these people who'd done this absolutely horrific crime had walked out of the court with that money in their pockets. Could you believe it? This is the injustice that goes on in this country. And there's still lots of girls up and down the country who are missing. And whether they've met the same fate, who can tell? It's just pure speculation. I wouldn't be surprised. My own personal view is that they could have met the same fate as poor Charlene Downs did on an absolutely horrific occasion. Tim, your views there, buddy, what we've been talking about.
Well, I remember the Charlene Downs case very clearly, and like you, I thought it was a terrible injustice that not only did these Muslims not get prosecuted for what actually happened, but that they should have had the gall to even claim compensation after having gone through a court case. And all right, I accept that there is a principle that if somebody has to go through a court case and they cannot be proved to be guilty, then it is perhaps fair that they should be compensated to a certain degree. I mean, that's just a general thing.
So you should get compensation, Tim, when you won your case.
There is that, and I'm still talking to my solicitor about that. But it's the it's the scale of the compensation that, you know, all right, you've gone through an unpleasant experience and you've come out the other end and you think, well, okay, I never did anything and therefore maybe I should be due some compensation. But to come out with £250,000, you know, which is more than a lot of people earn in a lifetime, that is just totally and completely disproportionate. And I'm reminded of similar cases, not necessarily involving, you know, murder cases, but civil cases where people have disproportionate, well, Muslims in particular, have disproportionate amounts of compensation awarded to them for, you know, their hurt religious feelings, as if their feelings are somehow any more important than the feelings of anybody else. And it just seems to me that, you know, we're perhaps waking up a little bit to this now, but it's certainly been the case in the past that if a Muslim declares himself to be offended, then people fall over themselves to try and do something to put that right. And if they can't see an immediate solution, then they throw money at it. And that's just the wrong thing to do, because it encourages Muslims to behave badly.
Yeah.
It's like, I keep going back to the analogy of what do you do with a two-year-old child who's throwing a tantrum? You don't reward that behavior. And basically Muslims are two-year-old children that have never got out of throwing a tantrum whenever they don't get their way, and we're constantly rewarding that behavior, and then we're surprised when that behavior keeps on repeating itself. But yeah, I think it's totally wrong.
As they say, Tim, there's an old saying, and I don't will stand by it, but it used to be an old saying, spare the rod, spoil the child. And it does seem very much that way, where the Islamization is in this country and the Muslims.
Well, it is, because we are treating Muslims as if they were rational, grown-up people. And they're not. They're not. They subscribe to an ideology that completely destroys the ability for critical thinking. And although they grow up in physical terms and they look like adults, on the inside, they're just totally fucked up because of this inability. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a technical term. Sorry about that. because they cannot think in a critical fashion, they cannot use reason and logic and critical analysis. They can never fully appreciate what it's like to use the rest of their brain in the way that God designed it to be used. So they go round in a permanent state of infantilism, if you like. They never grow up, and they expect everybody else to fall into line with them. And we should be looking at them and saying, well,
oh no,
we've lost it.
Okay.
I'm down again.
Tim,
can anybody hear us?
I can hear you, Kel. I can hear you, Kel.
Yeah, you're back, Tim. You've just broken.
I think everybody's back.
Yeah,
all right.
Just,
the Muslims are everyone in my position requested reinforcements quick.
Exactly, Tommy.
Okay.
What happened?
Everything went silent. The studio went dark, and we lost everybody for about 5 seconds. And, Tim, you were in mid-sentence, and our deepest apologies.
That's always the way, please. Isn't it? Always the way. Where did I get up to? Do you want me to repeat any of that? Or have you all got the gist? I'm quite happy to repeat it.
You were doing quite well. You were actually neck deep into water. and you were just going like gangbusters. So
oh, I was, yeah.
Trying to pick up your thread.
Yeah. I remember now. That's right. I was up to my neck in it, and I was really getting stuck in. And, I got to the point where I was saying that Muslims are like two-year-olds having a temper tantrum because their inability to think critically means that they cannot develop their brain to the point that where they can interact like reasonable human beings with the rest of humanity. But they expect everybody else to fall into line with them. And we ought to just be saying, well, you look like an adult on the outside, but on the inside, you're just a two-year-old kid having a temper tantrum, and you need to go and stand in a corner.
Good point, Jim. But the case is that doesn't happen, does it? All they do is, as you say, they throw more money at them, and they just make the problems a lot worse and deterioration. And the breakdown of civility going on in this country, as we talk, it's happening sort of 24/7. Some places it's going on. So because they're too scared to actually pull them in, because they get the police are too scared because they get the racial tag put on them. You're attacking the Muslims, you know, because we're Muslims. Because I'm a Muslim, innit? That's why, because I'm a Muslim. No, because you're breaking the bloody law, mate. You break the law, and it's equal rights for everybody in this country. You do something wrong, you get caught, you pay the same time as what everybody else does. There shouldn't be a two-tier system at work in this country. That time these bloody politicians and the police knew it, because we're getting fed up with it, aren't we, guys? We're really pissed off with the way things are run in this country at this moment in time. That's why we want a total change. We want some draconian, people to be actually sorted out properly instead of all this pandering after them all the bloody time. What's it to do with the petrol dollar? You know, we know a lot of it's in the government to do with the petrol dollar. We know that. We all understand what that's about. But I'm getting fed, I don't know about you guys, we're getting fed up with the way that this country is being treated. And not only our country, but your countries, wherever you might live, you know, Denmark, Sweden, wherever. You're having a piss taking, we're having a piss taken out of us all, aren't we, guys? It's our country. I love my country.
I completely agree with that one as well, though. But I would like to ask a very personal question, if I may, to yourself, Jim, Jeff, and Tim. Jim is still with us.
Jim, who? Mash up here.
Is Tim still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Right then, Jeff and Tim. Not saying Jim this time. Right, obviously, without sounding ageist, obviously, you're of the generation of the 20th century. Now, you were obviously like teenagers or in your early 20s when Muslims first started coming here. Now, the first time you saw them moving onto your street, did you actually think anything back then of Islam and Muslims?
No, absolutely nothing at all from my point of view. No, they were just
In fact, you
noticed that they maybe dressed a little different, but you didn't think anything about it, you know, because lots of people dressed differently.
We got a few more flies around the district, though, didn't we, Jim? There was more flies.
Oh, Jeff, you are awful.
Well, obviously, looking at the way the country is now, do you go back and just, do you wish you could have gone back to the 60s and just said, well, this shouldn't be happening?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Because when there's only a few of them in the country, and they were, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, there were only a few. There was less than 1% of Muslims in the country. And, you know, you see them now and again, and you think, oh, well, that's unusual. And you think no more of it because it doesn't pose any kind of a threat. This is exactly what Dr. Peter Hammond was saying in his survey. When Muslims are less than 1% of the population, nobody sees them as a threat, and they don't act in a threatening way. They're seen as slightly exotic. You know, you see the odd curry house opening up and you think, oh, that's nice, you know, they've got some interesting food as well. So the experience is not negative when they are in very tiny proportions, which obviously when they first start to enter a country, that's how it appears. But the difference between Muslim populations and other populations is that when Muslim populations increase above approximately 1%, then you start to see all sorts of unpleasant things starting to take place. First thing you notice, well, maybe not the first thing you notice, but one of the things that happens is that they start to disproportionately appear in the criminal justice system, and that you end up with more Muslims in prison per head of population. So you might end up with 2 or 3% of Muslims in the population, but they represent maybe 11 or 12% of people in the prison system. And then once they're in the prison system, you get all the problems in prison with proselytization. And then when you go above 2 or 3% of the population, you start to see increasing demands in the public space. Not only, of course, do you start to get pressure to build mosques, but you also find that they're pressing for all sorts of dispensations when it comes to halal food certification. Just segregated classes for swimming, segregation we know, which is happening now in schools. I mean, all in all these little ways, little tiny ways that individually you might not notice, but when you add up the entire effect, you find that they are pushing and pushing and pushing every way that they can, and they do this obviously because the Islamic doctrine tells them that they have to exert their influence over the kuffar in whichever way is possible, wherever and whenever they can. So an individual's effort, you might not notice too much at all, but taken cumulatively, all of a sudden you start seeing not only are they everywhere, but they're getting into our faces everywhere. And by the time you get to 10% or so of the population, you then find that they're feeling a little bit stronger, a little bit more assertive, aggressive, and generally being a bloody nuisance. And they're starting to make their feelings known that if they don't get their way, they're going to make life uncomfortable for you. And it goes on from there and gets worse and worse. But when they first appear, you never think anything about it because they appear to be normal on the surface, and apart from slightly different clothing, they don't appear to pose a threat at all. And that's the danger, of course, that it's such a gradual thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was the same. I've got to echo what you said, Tim, because I remember, you know, as a young man, that there was a few Muslims about at the time, but they didn't impose themselves. There was no problem at all. But as you say, as time's gone by and we've had them pouring through the gates and they start to impose themselves, trying to bring this Sharia laws into the country. And they've really, you know, in the last 10, 12 years, have really started to step it up a bit. Well, quite a big way. We used to call it like stealth. This is galloping jihad that we see before us. And they're quite brazen about speaking about it as well. You get some of them, they don't want it to, they still want to try to fool you that Islam is a religion of peace. They want you, look, there's nothing wrong, we're peaceful people. Well, guess what? Check anywhere. Look on the internet. Look at the beheadings. Look at these ones that they show with people. You know, they got them in little orange jumpsuits, cutting people's heads off. Come on, guys, this is the real face of Islam, not the sugar-coated crap that they want you to believe in. This is the face, the real face of Islam. And this is what it intends to do to me, to you, to every free person, because we do not believe in that horrible ideology of theirs. They want to dispose of us or make us bow down to their false god. That's what they want us to do, and if we don't, chop, chop. There you go. I think I've summed it up there, Tim.
But I do also have some other, I don't know, a little update to do. Some good news for a nice change, guys. Pam in our Sunderland division, 10 minutes ago, her daughter has just given birth to her grandson.
Woo! Well done! Yay! Well, that's,
she's over the moon,
bless her. That is great news to hear a new birth, a new life coming into the world, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? So, yeah, for Pam and to all your family, good on you guys. God bless you. But, yeah, thank you.
3 ounces.
Well, I mean, talk about that. I had some, you know, I told you a little while ago, guys, anybody that's been listening to, my great-granddaughter who had a little baby. Well, he's out of hospital now, and he weighs a good 7 pounds now. So I'm so happy because I spoke to her the other day, and, you know, because she, you know, I spoke to her for a little while, and it was really, really good to hear that news. So, yes, so it's always good to hear that things are going quite well with the good people out there. So there you go. Thank you, Tommy. Also, I'd like to, before we move on, because we are starting to get down to the last quarter of the show, I haven't seen my mate for a little while. It's my good old mate, England-born. I haven't seen him around for a little while. So it's good to see you. Good to see you in the chat room, buddy. We've missed you, haven't we, Kel? We've missed old England-born. Where you been? That's what we say. But it's good to see you there. This evening, and I do know he had a couple of problems with the sound and that, but so that all you've got to do is normally refresh the page, isn't it, guys? But yeah, there you go. So yeah, Tommy, I thought that was a good question. What it was like when we was growing, you know, when we was a bit younger, of how things was, but it was quite quiet back then, wasn't it, Tim? We didn't have the problems what we've got
well,
today.
Well, no, we didn't, and it just goes to show that Dr. Peter Hammond knew exactly what he was talking about when he was writing about the effects of increasing Muslim populations. We're now up to probably just over 5% of Muslims in this country, and we are seeing the sort of problems that Dr. Peter Hammond predicted in his report. We are starting to see proselytizing in prisons. We are starting to see Muslims becoming much more aggressive, and especially in the ghettoized areas of our larger cities, where they make up not 5%, not 10%, but maybe 70, 80, 90% of Muslims. They make life so unpleasant for people who are living nearby that those people just up and move, because nobody wants to spend their life living next door to aggressive, antisocial Muslims, because that's what they do. They just make life so unpleasant for their non-Muslim neighbours that nobody wants to live next to them. And that's why areas like that become 100% Muslim, because it's just too unpleasant. You know, there are better things to do with your life than live next to Muslims. And
well,
that's the most sensible thing people think.
When does the politically correct society get onto this, though? Because it's like, they would be politically incorrect, but they say that the white communities need more diversity, but they don't say Muslim communities need diversity.
Exactly. Thank you, Tommy.
Of course we do. And not forgetting that I think Cameron said exactly the same. We shouldn't adapt. They shouldn't adapt to us, but we should adapt to them. And just to let you know, guys, we've got a gentleman on who's been sitting patiently, and of course it's Mr. Stanger. I've got to welcome you. Good evening, Stanger. Good to have you on the show this evening. Go ahead.
Oh,
right.
Why, thank you, gentlemen. So good to be
Stanger.
Here. Hey, I just wanted to point out one fact. I've worked in the high-tech industry for 20 years. Now, I'm not doing that. I'm actually in school again. But I've worked with an awful lot of Muslims, quite a few of them. Nice people, generally speaking, but not a single one of them has ever denounced the violence. Not a single one of them has ever denounced jihad. And on the morning of September 11th, I saw two of them high-fiving each other in the hallway. This is in Microsoft. These are not dumb people. This was not at the local 7-Eleven or gas station. Okay, this is high-tech people. These are educated people. And every year on 9-11, one of the cafeterias on the main campus of Microsoft in Redmond, Washington, gets shut down for everyone but Muslims. Infidels are not allowed so that they can throw a party on 9/11 to celebrate.
Unbelievable. Stanger, what can I say about that? It's a shock, but are we surprised? This is, as I was saying earlier on in the show, this is the true face of Islam. They smile at you, they talk to you, but all the time they've got hatred in their hearts, and it's what that horrible little book of theirs is that's been bred into them.
They get supported. They get supported by these companies. Believe me, this is not anything that is new to Microsoft. Okay, they're not unique in it by any way. I guarantee this is happening at every high-tech company out there. Amazon, Google, Intel, all of them. Apple. I guarantee this is happening there. They're having
it's infiltration, big scale, isn't it? It's very much so.
It's infuriating.
We've just
got
to come to terms with it, how to battle it, haven't we? Would you not agree? We've got to just come to terms and know how to battle this. And we do know it's an evil ideology. We know what its intentions are, and it's not favorable to us, the non-believers of their cult, of their ideology.
They'll smile and shake your hand and work with you. And I've even gotten along with a couple of them very, very well, and they've been good to work with. I mean, they're not stupid people. They're good to get the job done. But still, they have this same ideology, and they still support it, and they still send money back home. And it's just that's who and what they are because what they've been indoctrinated with. And it's absolutely horrible.
Well, as I say, that was just thank you so much for highlighting that, what you've noticed yourself there of these people high-fiving themselves on 9/11 and throwing little parties and that. And it's, as I say, this is what it's about. I mean, people seem to take in what the Muslims tell them, don't they, a lot of the time, don't they, Stanger? We're religious, we're peaceful. We don't want to cause anybody. But
no, we don't want to cause anybody any harm. I've made the bacon explosion several times. I don't know if you've seen it. You need to look it up if you don't know what a bacon explosion is. I have a smoker at home, so I make these things up from time to time. And when I did, I actually made up on a separate grill, in a separate pot, not on a grill, a halal recipe for two of the Egyptians that I worked with because I wanted to be nice to them. I mean, I worked with them. I worked well with them. And they actually accepted it. I made sure that I actually used halal meat, which I don't know if anybody knows this, but Foster Farms chicken has been halal for 30 years. And it's easy for them to do it. I mean, it really is. It's chicken. I made sure that I did that. I looked up a recipe that would be halal, and I actually went out of my way to make sure that I had something for these two guys that I worked with when I brought the bacon explosion in to share with the rest of us infidels. And I carried it in separate bags and everything. I mean, I made sure. But this is what we do. We go out of our way to actually work with people and to deal with them. And to say, okay, we can accept you in your peaceable ways. We can accept your dietary requirements, which, incidentally, one of the other guys that was there is very Orthodox Jewish, and he had one of these prepared chicken breasts that I had made. It's called 40 cloves and it's called 40 cloves and a chicken. And it's you got to look it up. It's awesome. Yeah. 40 cloves of garlic.
That's interesting.
Simmering in butter, and it's actually wonderful, and it goes great. You throw it on a bun on a nice
Dang, I've got to thank you for coming in one of your recipes tonight, brother.
I'll share my recipes with you at other times. But anyway, you guys got to close out your show. I just wanted to point that out to my
It's great. It's great having you call in anyway. And as I say, it's something that a lot of people don't seem to realize, but this is going on every year since 9/11. These people celebrating 9/11, high-fiving.
Yeah, they do.
And it's only
and they get
the people
supported
do
by
know.
These
this
companies.
The
thing is that this is in a country, the company is celebrating the attack on the country that made their company possible. I mean, just think about the insanity of that.
As Kel said, Stanger, it's lamity insanity, totally, isn't it? And Kel, I've got to coin that phrase that you say. So once again, I've got to thank you so much for calling in the show.
Stop the insanity.
There you go.
So I'll go ahead and hang up.
Thank you so much, Stanger.
Catch up with you later.
You take care, buddy. God bless you.
Bud.
Thank you very much. There you go.
Stanger is awesome.
He certainly is. It's always great to hear Stanger. Of course, he had a recipe for us as well. He's great. But, my goodness me, Kel. The show's gone. We've got probably, 10 minutes left of the show altogether.
And we had more people join us in the chat room, Jeff, of Vorpalbite is here. And, we've had another guest.
Would you like to have a quick rundown, Kel?
I did.
Oh, having issues at
the time. You know what? Oh, Jeff, that's right. My apologies, because incognito, because Block Talk Radio was reinventing the wheel again. But don't worry, I did a rundown earlier. No problems.
Oh, thank you so much, Kel. No, I'd like to thank everybody for being here tonight, in the chat room. And so it was good, really good to see, because I haven't seen him for a little while as well. My old mate, England Ball, I haven't seen for quite a while, and to see him come in and join in with the chat, and it's always a great pleasure. But to see everybody, it's always great, and it's always everybody's chatting away, aren't they, Kel? There's great links going in the chat room. It's a great place to be. We all say that. If you're a guest, it's a great place to be. Put yourself a little nickname and come and join them, because we really do. We have fun in the chat room, and also it'd be nice that your views are heard as well. But of course, to everybody on the panel this evening, Kel, once again, fantastic slides, great producing stuff that you've been doing. Of course, playing the clips. And we, ladies and gentlemen, you listened to Michael Savage earlier. Well, we've got a couple more clips, and we probably will be playing them over the next week or so, won't we, Kel? We've got some great clips. And, I think we've whet everybody's appetite on some of the things that that Michael Savage. It's great. He gets into... he has a bit of a debate with a Muslim and totally decimates him. And that is a great one. It's great, isn't it, Tommy? But, we can do that on another day, no problem. I'd say tomorrow night is we've got Comedy Central, haven't we, Kel?
And just to remind people, though, that Wahabi will not be joining us tomorrow night because he is giving his sister away in marriage, and she is going to be the sixth wife of somebody in Spongistan.
Well, there you go.
The show as well, guys. Jeff, we've got a regional demonstration next Saturday.
Oh, yeah, give us some details, Tommy, please, buddy.
Well, no details as of yet, guys, but it's in Rotherham, and ironically, believe it or not, it's about Muslim grooming gangs once again.
Well, are we surprised? Are we surprised whatsoever? Until it's about time that, how many times have we got to highlight these issues? Why do we have to keep going back to Rotherham? And are we going to keep going back until they do their jobs? And a lot of these people are taken off the streets, and the children of Rotherham can feel safe. They can walk the streets without fear of being sort of, groomed and all the horrible things that happen to them. And about time that the police really clamp down on these people. They've got to be put in their place. This is unacceptable in our societies. These are our children. You will not fuck around with our children. Excuse my language, guys. But we're getting really, really fed up of it. And we will keep coming up to Rotherham, and we'll keep putting pressure on our governments and the police to do their jobs. they can't do their jobs, get out and let someone else do it. So there you go. So thank you very much, Tom, for and we will be highlighting
that
over the next couple of days.
Yeah, two of the victims are going to be speaking, guys. That's been confirmed.
Tommy, will you be speaking?
Oh, God, I don't know about me, but I know two of the victims are.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that's...
fantastic that we're going to hear voices of the victims. Thanks, Tommy.
Yes, indeed.
All you're going to see is the media's whitewashed events, like a sentence here, a sentence there. Did that get some sort of their ordeal? Some were handcuffed and left for hours. Was it? One girl was still 200 hours on the bed, handcuffed.
Oh, good God.
The police raided the house.
Wow.
Well, that's why we have to get their words out incomplete so everybody can see them and hear them.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point there, Agador, you know. And that's what we'll try to do because it's only right that
we
should hear.
There for them.
Yeah.
Yes, and that is Rotherham on May the 10th, right, Tommy?
Oh, God, Kel, I just love the way you pronounce our cities. I really do.
She does it so precise.
Hey, you try pronouncing Toronto. Come on.
Toronto.
Hey, I go Toronto.
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 I love
yeah. Where
here
where
we
is
say
Jess, Toronto. Where Jess goes London, I go London, and Tyndall goes London, isn't it, bro?
Hey.
What's that, Tommy?
And
Jeff says Wahidi.
Yeah, you'll say London.
Birmingham. Yeah, that's right.
Birmingham.
It's Birmingham. That's what we're doing.
Dudley, isn't it? Dudley.
Dudley. Dudley. Oh, you never lived. You never lived until you come to Dudley. If you ain't been to Dudley,
yeah,
you've
yeah.
never lived.
Say
much
that,
better
guys.
Than Birmingham. Much better than Birmingham.
Birmingham, it's like that, isn't it?
Oh, my
God. Birmingham.
I'm going to get you guys to be quiet
now. This is like a bunch of Kentuckians calling it Louisville.
every town, every city, everybody talks a little bit different, don't they, guys?
You certainly have your different colloquialisms, that's for sure. But I thank Tommy. I want to thank Tommy for reminding everybody that yes, there is a demo in Rotherham.
Rotherham.
I don't even know if I got that one. Tommy, take it away.
Saying that, can anyone do a scouse?
Hey,
no.
Calm down, lad.
Calm down.
I'm still learning. Stop blaming, Governor.
Oh, my God. That's Dick Van Dyke, isn't it,
yeah.
guys? Dick Van
Dyke
was
like
his name.
Yeah.
Everybody does it like that, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, blimey, Mary Poppins.
Brilliant. Oh, my God. I've got to say, guys, I've got Agador and Tim, Tommy, Kel, and, of course, Stang, who called in. I've got probably about 3 minutes. I was going to say maybe everybody just have a quick last couple of seconds of their thoughts just for the evening. Kel, it's ladies first. Go on, Kel.
I think we covered a lot of territory. I think that in exposing people like Anjum Chowdhury is very important for us to do. We have to start speaking out about these people as individuals. We concentrate a lot on Islam as a general topic. There are so many out there, it's hard not to do, of course, but I think that we should start doing more individual targeting, and I think discussing Ajum Chowdhury was marvelous tonight, Jeff.
No, thank you, Kel. And guys, I would say your last thoughts, but I've just the ladies just whispered in my ear, "Oi, sexy, you got 90 seconds." So I've got a lot of time for everybody. But thank you all, guys. Thank you for being here and part of the panel and the team. Everybody in the chat room, God bless you guys. And I've just been telling there, she's saying to me, "You got 60 seconds." So with that, from myself, from Kel, Tommy, Agador, God bless, take care, stay safe. No surrender ever. We're going underground for about 30
no
seconds.
No surrender ever.
No surrender ever.
Cheers, Moroccan. Oh, for one. Oh.
Over 70 years ago.
I've got the one.
I did.
There you go. Sorry about that.
I'm too busy dodging through your flight to see here, so what you